From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, July 19th, 2017. And on this day, Land for Maine's Future, which buys private land for public conservation, is looking to bring more people onto the land as tourists. And we'll check in on how Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap's doing on President Trump's voter fraud commission. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
Secretary of State Matt Dunlap says President Trump's controversial voter fraud commission should make sure ballot security does not discourage voter participation. Dunlap's one of four Democrats on a 12-member panel that critics say is engineered toward nationalizing Republican voter suppression efforts. Steve Missler has more.
The commission met for the first time at the White House on Wednesday, and Dunlap used his opening remarks to offer some advice to address claims of voter fraud.
Anything that we do to answer those questions, to reassure people that there are no goblins under the bed, and if there are, we deal with them in a way that is balanced, again, towards access to the voting public to participate in their government. This is not ours. It belongs to them.
Critics of the President's Advisory Commission on Election Integrity believe the commission is an excuse to purge voter rolls and to enact policies that will disenfranchise Democratic-leaning voters, such as minorities or college students. There are no fewer than seven lawsuits seeking to halt the commission, some challenging its conduct and transparency, others the legality of its purpose. In his opening remarks to the commission, Vice President Mike Pence repeatedly attempted to reassure viewers that the panel's mission is not a sham.
I can attest and promise you that we do go into this process with no preconceived notions or preordained results.
But Pence was seemingly undercut by President Trump, who also addressed the commission. First, he repeated his unproven claim that there was widespread voter fraud during the 2016 election, and he also insinuated that the states, including Maine, refusing to hand over detailed voter registration information to his election commission, are hiding the evidence.
If any state does not want to share this information, one has to wonder what they're worried about. And I asked the vice president, I asked the commission, what are they worried about? There's something. There always is.
Dunlap has told the commission that the registration data would violate state laws protecting personal voter registration information from being made public. The controversy illustrates the quagmire for Dunlap, who says he wants to act as a check on the commission, but whose participation is seen by some as legitimizing its work. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
This year, the Land for Maine's Future program turns 30. Despite coming under fire from Governor Paul LePage, who opposes most taxpayer-funded conservation projects, LMF has strong public support. Since 1987, it's been bolstered by more than half a dozen statewide bonds that have helped conserve 600,000 acres and more than 150 destinations. And as Susan Sharon reports, those destinations are now part of a marketing effort to get Mainers to access and enjoy the properties they own.
The properties range from working waterfronts and public forests to remote swimming holes and scenic hikes. Some are dramatic and better-known locations like Mount Kineo in the heart of Moosehead Lake or the Bog Brook Cove Preserve, part of Washington County's increasingly popular Bold Coast. And now LMF has organized a way to easily find these places. It's being called a passport, essentially a link, to 35 recommended itineraries with information about outdoor activities that are welcome at each spot free of charge.
For me, one of the great gems is the Levitt Plantation, which is in Parsons Field. So way over in northern York County. That's a great spot, really good for mountain biking or hiking.
Tom Abella with the Nature Conservancy in Brunswick says another favorite place is Dodge Point on the western shore of the Damariscotta River, where you can swim, fish, and hike on 6 miles of trails. Timber harvesting and hunting are also permitted in certain sections of the parcel, says Stephen Huffnagel of the Damariscotta River Association. And yes, they all coexist. This was the first project conserved by LMF back in 1989.
This place was absolutely deeply loved already because the former owners allowed people to come and walk their dogs and take hikes, so it already had a built-in constituency. So it was a great example of the community rallying around a piece of property for all of its many uses. And today, if you ask people in Newcastle, could you imagine town without this, they would say, no way.
And like so many other LMF projects, Hufnagel says it likely would have been logged and divided up and sold as house lots with a permanent loss of access to the shore. Minimizing sprawl and protecting access to the water is one reason LMF was amended in 2005 to allow for the inclusion of farms and working waterfronts. At Crystal Spring Farm in Brunswick, about a dozen pigs are raised for meat as part of one of the largest CSAs in Maine. This was formerly a dairy farm. And when it came up for sale, Angela Twitchell of the Brunswick Topsom Land Trust says her group worked hard to protect it. They raised more than $2 million on their own and were awarded an additional $400,000 by LMF.
Crystal Spring Farm is about 320 acres, and we lease about 100 acres of that to a farmer who runs a agricultural business. He grows organic vegetables and various other things. And then the rest of it, we have about a six-mile trail system. We have a community garden where we have about 83 plots that community members lease and grow their own food. And a farmer's market.
Twitchell says with more than 40 vendors, the farmer's market attracts as many as several thousand people, some of whom also take their dogs walking on the farm's trails or meditate in the outdoor labyrinth that has been set up in some nearby woods. Other destinations and activities can be found on the LMF's Passport link. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Maine is one of the most rural states in the nation, and it has some of the worst internet access. And out on the coastal islands, internet service ranges from lousy to non-existent. Now residents of the Cranberry Isles, from lobstermen to telecommuters, are banding together to pay for costly new infrastructure that they hope will preserve a threatened way of life. Fred Bever has the story.
Summertime in the Cranberry Isles feels pretty idyllic. Golden badges of sun bounce from the water, backlighting lobster boats, yachts, and ferries that shuttle around this small circle of unbridged islands. It's a couple of miles seaward from Acadia National Park. But while the constant water traffic keeps the islands physically connected, residents chatting here at the Great Cranberry Island Country Store are worried about a different kind of connection, internet connection.
And it's incredibly slow, and it's weather dependent. So if there's fog or rain or, you know, it's dark out or whatever, it doesn't work as well.
Samuel Donald manages a local boatyard. He and owner Barbara Stanton are mulling a municipal plan to radically upgrade internet service for the Cranberries, taking internet speeds from a rate that hovers around 1 megabit per second, that's glacial, to more useful rates as high as 100 megabits per second. The setup will include beaming data from a boatyard microwave antenna over to the island next door.
And also, we do have a good location there.
Right, yeah. We can see both the hill on Islesford where they are considering putting the tower and the Coast Guard station where they're considering an alternate location.
Is that where the thing you're doing it? Yeah.
So either way, the boatyard is kind of an ideal spot. Plus, we can get...
Samuel says fast and reliable internet access is as indispensable today as electric or phone service. The upgrade can't come soon enough for Kelly Sanborn. She tried recently to make some money as a medical transcriptionist, telecommuting from her house out on the island's edge. Her daughter Jessica's online homework sometimes took a back seat.
Well, when it was just me on the internet, it was pretty fast. But when more than one of us was using it, it went pretty slow.
What happens when I want to work on the computer?
She takes all of the internet, she unplugs it and plugs it into her computer.
I turn off the Wi-Fi so no one else can touch it.
But it didn't last. When summer people crowd the island and compete for its limited bandwidth, connections slow to a sub-crawl. Every time the spinning wheel of death appeared on her screen, Sanborn says, she saw dollars spinning away. She gave up medical transcription and took a job at the country store. Workarounds can be found. At the local library, residents set up shop from its porch and parking lot, laptops open to tap into its Wi-Fi. The library's dedicated internet service is the fastest on the island, and it's a digital lifeline for students who attend a mainland high school, for a telecommuting graphic designer, and for Rosalie Kell, an administrator for an international service mission.
It's about lifestyle and culture and preserving cultures in a way that would not happen if we don't keep up with the 21st century.
At the turn of the 20th century, there were 200 main islands with year-round residents. That's dwindled to 15 now. But community and nonprofit efforts to boost numbers are paying off on the Cranberries, where three students recently graduated from eighth grade, the most in 20 years. It doesn't hurt that this area of eastern Maine is a lobstering haven. Here in Islesford's Hadlock Cove, eighth-generation resident Nick Hadlock shovels herring inside a docktop work shed. His four-year-old son, Elliot, looks on.
I fish 800 traps. That's the limit for the state of Maine.
Internet service here, Hadlock notes, is even worse than on Great Cranberry. So he supports the $1.2 million property tax-backed bond that voters from all the Cranberries approved at March Town Meeting, setting the new effort in motion. Like most residents, he'd prefer that a big grant application succeeds and lets taxpayers off the hook. But if they do have to go to the well, Hadlock says it's justified.
Keeps them on the islands other than going off on a ferry back and forth, and helps out actually, you know, raising kids and stuff. You know, mother and parents can stay at home and do their job right from there.
Machias-based internet company Axiom Technologies plans to get new internet service for Islesford online before this winter, with service to the rest of the Cranberries following next year. So far, residents of 33 main islands and remote coastal communities have joined an effort spearheaded by the Island Institute to get robust internet service to participants within 10 years. Next up, Islesboro, Isle of Hoe, and three of Portland's Casco Bay Islands, Cliff, Long, and Chabig. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Wednesday, July 19th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.